Welcome to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM. Brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry, plus Bobby Curran, here to bring you the very best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. We do this every Thursday morning. We bring you the very best of what we can find out there to eat. And there is a lot going on, a lot of good stuff to eat and drink. A lot of new restaurants continuing to open. And this morning we have news of some of them, and we also have some really fun guests this morning. I'm so looking forward to talking to our first guest today because he's Anderson Lay. He is the creative director of the Hawaii International Film Festival, and they are doing something that really is going to be so fun to talk about. It's called Eat Drink Film. It's their Eat Drink Film series, and we're going to be talking about movies and food. Of course, the movies have always been associated with food because people have traditionally always eaten their way through movies. But for a very long time now, there have been films where food has featured and been such a central, integral part of them. So I can't wait to talk to Anderson this morning about what they've got going on, and this is starting imminently. I think it starts today, actually, the Hawaii International Film Festival. Now, those of you who were our longtime listeners to this radio show, first of all, you know, I hate mentioning how long it's been on the air, but it has been a very long time. In fact, it is as old as the Hawaii International Film Festival, because when the film festival was first getting on its feet and becoming established in Hawaii with a wonderful Chuck Bowler and Donnie Dawson, we were on air, and they were amongst our very first guests in the afternoon. Those of you who remember the radio show that we used to do in the afternoon drive times, the Gusto Files, I think we called it at that point. We had a lot of Hawaii International Film Festival guests, and we did promotions. And I recently bumped into Donnie Dawson, and we were talking about it. And she pointed out, which is not a good memory, but it's true, that it was pre-internet, because we didn't have, like, Google. We couldn't look up any film trivia. We had to actually know what we were talking about. But anyway, that's just a fun fact to share with you, that it's been a really long time. So Anderson Lay is going to join us this morning and chat about food and the movies, and I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm also really looking forward to chatting with Dana Shapiro. She is the co-founder of the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative, and along with her husband and a team, they've created a network of breadfruit farmers to promote this magnificent fruit. Breadfruit, as many of you know, is just an extraordinary fruit. It can do so many things. It can be used in so many different ways. And she is going to chat with us about her passion for Ulu. So two different, very passionate people coming on air with us this morning. We're looking forward to chatting to both of them. And it started to make me wonder about food and films. What is your favorite food film? I bet you have one. Even if it's just a scene in a film that's in a restaurant where the eating or what they're eating is integral to the film, I bet you everybody has one. I have to say that one of my favorite food films of all time has to have been Big Night, or The Big Night, I think, as it was called, which was just such an incredible celebration of Italian food and Italian, just a beautiful, beautiful story. That is a really good food movie if you haven't seen it. And, of course, there's dozens more. We're going to be asking Anderson Lay about some of his favorites. Of course, the ones that we'll be premiering at the Hawaii International Film Festival are food films that will be very contemporary. A couple of them actually were made in Hawaii, so it's going to be really interesting to hear more about them. But it would be fun to hear from you too, if you have like favorite food movies that you want to share with us. That would be fun. So that's coming up this morning in just a little bit. We're also, I don't think we have time for it this week, but we are going to be able to squeeze it in next week for sure. And you can go and read about it on our website. If you go to mojomcgarry.com or radiomojohawaii.com, where you'll hear the podcasts, you'll see and hear our interview with Kyle Reutner of Kohana Agricole Rum. We went over there to visit with him a week or so ago, did a tour of the farm over in Kunia, and have a really, really nice interview with Kyle, just talking about this now 5-year-old distillery where they make everything purely from scratch. So you might not know this, or a lot of people might not know this, but most rum is used, they use a product of sugarcane, like molasses, for example. I bet you didn't know this, Bobby. I'm getting very technical here, okay, off the top of my head. Molasses is kind of the base, so sugary, sweet, but not pure sugarcane. Using pure sugarcane juice is time-consuming and expensive and hardly done anywhere in the world, except in Hawaii, where we have the most magnificent varietals of sugarcane. Some of them have been preserved for hundreds of years, and 500 years before they began sugarcane production in the Bahamas, we were using sugarcane here in Hawaii for the same reason. So it's got a really interesting history, and it seems like it's a natural drink that we should be producing. So we're going to have that interview with Kyle coming up next week, and it's really fun and really interesting. And if you haven't been out to Kohana Rum, out to the distillery, it is, as Kyle says, it's the best adult field trip possible on the Hawaiian Islands.
Now, let me ask something. Can you taste the difference between molasses and pure sugarcane? Is that a taste?
Well, in the eventual spirit, you're going to notice that Hawaiian, to me anyway, I mean, everyone's taste is different, but to me, Hawaiian rum, first of all, it's very clean. It tastes very pure. It's not old enough yet to be, I mean, they do have a reserve. They have a reserve that's preserved in koa wood cask, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Very, very... Yeah. Bougie, as the kids would say, but very nice. So we know how it's developing, but we don't know the end result yet because it's only 5 years old. But yes, I do think you can. Well, you know, with any distilled spirits, if anything's been done really quickly and forced, you can immediately taste it immediately. And one of the ways, well, I won't get into my secrets, but you can. There are ways that you can taste whether something is just like pure alcohol and it's just been flavored and rushed out there. And that does happen in the spirit industry because, you know, it's a huge, you know, commercial industry, and people are always wanting to create like a new vodka, for example.
I was just going to say, with vodkas, I mean, there've been new ones down the street seemingly every year.
Exactly, and that's because, I mean, let's face it, you can make vodka from potatoes, right? I mean, you can take anything and get a distilled spirit up and running, flavor it with something, and, you know, off you go and off to the races. And that's been done even here in Hawaii, actually. There's been a few startups like that. So that's completely the opposite of what's happening at Hawaiian Agricole Rum. And here's another thing, too, that we talked about with Kyle, really important. He didn't focus on it, of course, because he's too polite, but I brought it up, of course. This is really a made-in-Hawaii product. I mean, recently we've been seeing more and more, you know, products that have made-in-Hawaii stamped on them, and they're not. And I just think, along with a lot of other people, I just find that really offensive, you know. So it started off 30 years ago, 25 years ago with Kona Coffee, right? We started to discover so many packages of Hawaii Kona Coffee that people got wise to it and thought, it's not possible to make. It's like San Marzano tomatoes. There's no way all those tomatoes come from the San Marzano region in Italy, because they just couldn't. It's, just think about it, right? Everywhere you go in the world, you see something that's branded San Marzano. It's not possible. Only some of those tomatoes are legit.
But with the coffee.
With the coffee, it's not legit. Some of it's less than 10%.
Right. I'm saying that's the deal. It's the percentage that's at dispute.
Right. There's a little tiny bit of it. But the impression is given that this is a Hawaii product. I mean, we won't name any names, but surely I was not the only person completely floored to find out that the chocolate macadamia nuts I've been buying for years to take back to Scotland were not made in Hawaii. That was a real shocker.
That's crazy.
That is a real shocker. So when you see how much of that goes on, I mean, even beer. Again, we shall not name the distillery, but for a really long time, a made-in-Hawaii beer was not made in Hawaii and is still not, but is really famous as Hawaii's local beer. That's just not on, I think. You don't take from Hawaii and use its name.
Well, I thought there were laws about that, of like percentages and origins, and that you have to satisfy certain criteria.
I think the difficulty is in finding, you know, I mean, look at the Department of Health, for example, whose job it is to go around and, you know, certify restaurants. There's like 3 people who work there. I mean, there's obviously more people in the department, but in terms of people who go around and do inspections, very few people who are actually doing it. So a lot of this goes, you know, under noticed, because there just aren't the people who are, you know, you'd have to have somebody wholly dedicated to just saying, okay, I know, you know, chocolate macadamias are not being made here. Let's go and trace, which is what happened, right? Trace the addresses, trace the source. But it's very dedicated people that do that. So, yeah, anyway, well, that was way going off on a tangent. But Hawaiian agricole rum is not like that. And it's just purely made here with a really, really interesting history. And the history is so fascinating that, and Kyle is a great historian. Kyle Reutner is one of those guys who is just so passionate about what he does. I mean, as a bartender, when he used to work at Town, and then when he was the beverage director at the Pig and the Lady, you know, people would go just to see him. You know, I mean, they'd go for...
Got a following.
He had a huge following, because not only would he make you some fantastic drink that, you know, you didn't even know you wanted it until you drank it. he was just great at talking about the history of cocktails. He's no different over there at the distillery. He's absolutely just fabulous. And he's really, really good fun to listen to. So, yeah, it was a fun trip. I encourage everybody to go out there and support them. Buy the rum when you're out there. Buy the T-shirt. This is a huge, potentially huge Hawaii business. They've just bought more farmland out in Kunia. To me, there's nothing better we can do than support local agriculture, and this is local agriculture at its finest. So there we go. What we're going to do is go and take a really short break. When we come back, do stay with us. You don't want to miss this. If you're a fan of the movies and you love particularly movies and food, Anderson Lay is going to join us to talk more about that. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry, plus Bobby Curran, here to bring you the very best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. And I'm so excited to talk to our next guest, because we're going to be talking a lot about eating, drinking, not living in Hawaii specifically, but definitely living in the movies. Anderson Lay from Hawaii International Film Festival is joining us. Anderson, good morning.
Good morning. Aloha. Hi, Joe.
How are you?
I'm going good.
Thanks for taking some time to talk to us. This is such a favorite topic of mine. First of all, the film festival, which of course is online. Is it 100% still online, or are you actually allowed to be in person for anything?
Yeah, I mean, for our main festival in November, will be a hybrid event with cinemas, drive-ins, and also virtual online. But for this showcase, we're doing a series of showcases through the summer, and this one, Eat, Drink, Film, is completely online and available nationwide to view.
How fantastic. Now, you have such a huge bio. You have such incredible experience in the film world. I would love to just talk a little bit about you first before we get into the shorts and the great movies that we're going to be seeing over the next month. Where did your love of film start? How did this all begin for you?
I think I really discovered, I was always, I'm a child of the 80s, so I love movies, you know, I was like a latchkey kid, so I watched a lot of movies when I was at home. I think really my love for cinema, especially global cinema, really was awakened in college. So, I went to the University of Hawaii, and the Sinclair Library had, like, perhaps hands down one of the best back then VHS libraries of international film. So I would just like borrow films and watch it in the library for hours and hours on end. So that was really my kind of awakening really discovering all these auteurs from like Godard, French New Wave to, Akira Kurosawa, Stanley Kubrick and the like. So it was really kind of my discovery there and my awakening for cinema in college.
Was there a particular genre that you were drawn to very early on, or was it just the movies in general that attracted you?
It was just more movements, like the French New Wave or neorealist cinema from Italy and whatnot. So that was really kind of my, of course, the American kind of like cinema of the 70s, kind of focusing on the artist or the auteur theory, that really fascinated me. So that's really kind of my kind of gateway drug, so to speak, was trying to just tracking these like filmmakers that were really kind of had, famous filmmakers, and just tracking their work and seeing the evolution of their art was really, really intrigued me.
Wow, it's so fascinating. And, it gives me hope for any kids whose parents are saying to them, stop staring at Netflix or stop, watching the screen so much, because for some of them, this is going to turn into, as it has done for you, a passion that is your life's work and you're very successful at. So I bet you're an advocate of seeing kids sitting down and watching as many movies as they can.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially now, we're inundated, the visual medium. I mean, cinema itself is the most powerful medium in the world, right? And it kind of has bled over to everything that we consume, especially our social media feeds to anything that is filmed content now. To really develop your mind and critical thinking and film criticism, and to see films not as just entertainment, but as something as a reflection of or a commentary on, the human condition. So that's kind of like, what is most exciting. And I think a lot of kids now, especially this new generation, are, seeing that in seeing films in a different lens, which is really exciting.
I agree 100%. And there's something about a film that can touch you so deeply, whereas, perhaps reading about an event or hearing about an event, or even watching it real time unfolding. I mean, there must be so many of us who can go back to times in history that we've lived through where the movie made about it has touched us so deeply because we actually lived through the event. So yeah, I think the power of the movies is so magnificent. I obviously love movies with food in them. Ever since films like Babette's Feast, really celebrated food on just a whole new level, I've really been so enthused and so excited about movies with food. I have to say, I was thinking this morning, because I know I was going to talk to you, and I was thinking, what is my favorite food movie of all time? And do you know what I think it is? Honestly, people might be surprised, because I know, like, Bobby, for example, would think, isn't that a Disney film? But it's Ratatouille. I think Ratatouille is the most magnificent food movie because of the detail in the kitchen and the fact that Thomas Keller consulted on it. And if you know a kitchen and if you know recipes and if you know how even a sauce is constructed, everything that's done in that film is done perfectly. And I love that. Does that sound weird because it's a Disney film?
No, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, I think you know, I'm just revisiting what you said earlier about these movies is really kind of, I mean, I see movies as very much like a milestone in your, you know, a life's journey. You know, they're touchstones. They're like, you know, like you have, I mean, it all encapsulates basically in that scene in Ratatouille with Anton Ego when he has that bite of food and he's transported back to his childhood, right? I think that is kind of, that best encapsulates that. I mean, it can be, it's all art. I mean, like food and culinary, is definitely an art, right? So, and no different from a film or a song or a lyric or a poem. These are all kind of these touchstones that, you know, kind of are very much kind of our benchmarks in our lives. And that's, that's how...
Agree 100%. Yeah. I could watch that film over and over again just for the tiny details that are in it. So let's get to Hawaii International Film Festival's Eat, Drink, Film series. So it starts now. It's online. Do tell us about, first of all, the idea to do this, and then how do you go about choosing the food movies that will be featured?
Sure. So, I mean, this showcase is called Eat, Drink, Film, and it's basically a spinoff of, we actually have an Eat, Drink, Film section in our main festival in November. This is the big show, the main film festival. So, I mean, we had this opportunity to, because of the pandemic, we pivoted to a virtual festival, which like we did last year. And, you know, I think it's like, we wanted to kind of spread it out year round and have these showcases, and so kind of revisit these kind of very popular sections, you know, of the festival. And we just do so, you know, Eat, Drink, Film made perfect sense. And, so, I mean, me and my programming team, we're watching films constantly for our main November festival, you know, and so, you know, we always have, you know, we're always in mindful of like, oh, what would be great for our Eat, Drink, Film series? And, you know, these are kind of films that we've seen that would, you know, that fit perfectly, especially, you know, with the type of films that we wanted to program for the showcase. You know, not only in the sense of quote unquote food porn, right? Food films that, you know, like they have like great, like, you know, like you have a film called Food Luck, which is about yakiniku. But, you know, we're also looking at, you know, like films from all over the world that kind of shine a light on things that, you know, are not well known or discussed, like in Hawaii, for example, like, Criollo, which is a documentary about Uruguay, you know, cuisine and like kind of like the family history of the chef and you know the kind of the roots behind the, you know, the particular cuisine to Her Name Is Chef, which is a documentary on basically the quote unquote sheroes of the kitchen, you know, looking at the gender disparity and the challenges of women chefs in the, you know, in the industry. So I mean,
now this is an interesting. This is an interesting one, Her Name Is Chef, because you guys are actually hosting a Facebook panel to talk about this. I was going to say following the movie, but of course anyone can watch the movie whenever they like. But and Martha Chang is going to be kind of hosting a panel of female chefs or sheroes to talk about this. I love that idea because, again, it's like it's making the film a pivotal part of what's going on in today, where we are, where we're living. I just interviewed, I read an interview with a chef that I'm going to be interviewing in a few weeks in Scotland, and she was very irritated because somebody asked her about being a woman in the kitchen, and she said, I'm so annoyed that people keep asking that question. There are women in kitchens. Just get real and live with it. And I think Her Name Is Chef is obviously a movie that's just celebrating that, saying, listen, we're here. I mean, it's, you know, it's nothing really that new. It's just that men took that role and ran with it for a really long time. I imagine that's going to be quite a lively panel when it airs. When is that Facebook discussion?
So that discussion is on June 16th. I believe that's next Wednesday, and it's going to be at 5 p.m. It's going to be an hour conversation, and you can. It's going to be on, and it's going to be streamed live on our Facebook and YouTube, and you can register on our website if you want to. And you know, well, aside from Martha moderating the panel with local chefs like Leanne Wong and Robin Mai from FET, but and also Kawi Keolani Sana, the general manager of Ma'o Organic Farms. We're still waiting on a couple more panelists to confirm, and there'll definitely be a lively conversation, but we'll also have Q&A as well. So, you know, if you have any questions, you know, you can just like, basically ask the panelists during that panel. So it'll be very exciting. It'll be a fun, lively conversation.
It definitely will be. We're talking to Anderson Lay, Creative Director of the Hawaii International Film Festival, about the Eat Drink film series, which is starting now. Anderson, if you had to, you know, sort of give out a tip or two for somebody who wanted to just go straight to what you think perhaps is a favorite, which of the movies that are playing would you say, oh, go watch this one first because?
I think we have like three Japanese films that are really popular, you know, that I think are, you know, really good. Food Luck is one that's really fun. Mio's Cookbook is kind of a historical drama, set in like Osaka in the 19th century, and it's basically about a local restaurateur, and you know, basically saying her basically a soba shop, you know, in Edo period. So, and this thing, you know, very costume drama, it's very beautiful, and you know, those are the type of films that are very popular with our hip audiences. But you know, we have a documentary called Meet the Future, which I think is really, really interesting, and it's basically about the timely documentary on the, you know, movement for cultivated meat, you know, and the food science to grow real meat from animal cells in the lab, you know.
Wow.
And it's a way to, and this is not impossible meat or beyond meat. This is actually growing, you know, like using animal cells in the lab, and it's basically as a way to for a sustainable future, especially,
right,
you know, when it comes to, you know, kind of industrialization and, you know, the carbon footprint of you know, the industrialization of the cattle industry, for example, the meat industry, especially in the U.S., right? So this is kind of like a movement that a lot of scientists are looking at to basically work on cultivated meat and then make it sustainable for the environment.
Wow, it certainly is an interesting time to be in the food industry, isn't it? I mean, there's such a celebration of different food cultures. There's, as you say, there's the whole kind of food porn industry where we just can't get enough of beautiful imagery of food. And then there's the science and the kind of just political side of food too. I mean, Netflix, I think, has done an incredible job on creating documentaries where we really have to look at our own attitudes towards food, the consuming of it, the purchase of it, where we choose to spend our dollars. I mean, really, you could go on forever. I'm surprised you were able to just narrow it down to a few films. Good job. Anderson, how do people access these wonderful movies? Tell us how we can all be part of the film festival.
Sure. You just go to our website at hif.org, and you'll see the big graphic for Eat Drink Film. And, you know, you can actually purchase virtual tickets and watch them individually. Or you can, I highly recommend getting the all-access pass. You know, basically you skip the pass and you can watch all the films at your leisure anytime between today to June 20th. And, it's a great deal. You know, it comes out to basically a few bucks per movie, you know, I think that's the best deal you can get there.
Absolutely.
And
while we do all miss going to the movies, you know, just for the social aspect of it, and I think particularly Hawaii International Film Festival events are always fun to do in person, so roll on November when we can do a few of them. There is some benefit to staying at home and watching a movie, especially a food movie, because you can cook along or you can order in food that suits the movie that you're going to be watching, and you can actually make a really good, fun evening of it, which we hope people do to support the film festival and also to watch these really terrific choices of films. Anderson, it was just a pleasure to talk to you. I do hope you'll come back and join us again in November so we can talk about the film festival and what it will have in store for us.
I can add one more thing. That's a great example because, you know, aside from watching it at your leisure at home, we also have partners from local partners like Bite Squad and Kukula Market are offering discounts during the showcase. So, like, for example, so on our website at hit.org, we have a list of all these partners with discounts and promo codes that you can use to basically order food and make it a nice feast for your eyes with the cinema and a feast for yourself at home with friends as well. So
absolutely, and because the movies are so so well introduced on the website, you can for example, for Food Luck, you could do your own teppanyaki dinner at home and eat along and just get more out of it. I think it's a wonderful idea. I love your choices of food. I can't wait to sit down and watch my way through them this weekend. And thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much.
Anderson Lay is a creative director of the Hawaii International Film Festival. You can find out more by going to hiff.org, H-I-F-F, Hawaii International Film Festival. You will find all of the information there about the Eat, Drink, Film Festival. And wow, that's just such a good idea and such good movies. I think we will be watching them. And I look forward to being on the Facebook a discussion page and hearing what our she-chefs have to say about the movies. All right, we're going to go and take a short break. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
This is Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu.
Hey, welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry, plus Bobby Curran. We do this every Thursday. We bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii, and we do it thanks to our very special partners, Pyology Pizzeria and Southern Glazers Wines and Spirits. Bobby, there's some exciting sporting thing happening right now with a Hawaii connection.
Yeah,
we love that, right?
Well, here it is. The Women's College World Series, which is the fast pitch softball, is going on right now in Oklahoma City. And here's the thing. The National Women's Player of the Year is named Jocelyn Alo. She is a Hawaii girl from Campbell High School.
Wonderful.
The best player of the year. So yesterday, she hit the home run for Oklahoma that broke the Hawaii record for home runs in a season.
Wow.
She was the one who broke it.
A Hawaii girl breaking the Hawaii record.
Yes. And by the way, today, because they won yesterday, which tied the series at one, it's a best of three. So right now is going on the winner take all. The winner of this game is the national champion. Jocelyn will bat second in the lineup. She comes up in the top of the first inning. I think it's the top. And belts it right out of the park with two strikes. So another home run and Oklahoma leading 1-0. Isn't that fabulous?
So she's the best star. She's the best softball female or the best softball player in the country.
Yes, exactly.
That's phenomenal. That's
so
really
voted.
Fantastic.
Yes.
That's really great. Good for Campbell. I was interviewing a couple of teachers from Campbell High School yesterday for the Chamber of Commerce series of interviews that we do, which people can access by going to the Hawaii Chamber of Commerce website. And I got to tell you, that school is so forward-thinking. They are so devoted to their students. They give them every opportunity they possibly can. We were talking about their work-in-place programs that they have. They are so focused on getting those kids into careers and keeping them in Hawaii, you know, keeping all the energy they can in Hawaii and creating jobs so people can live sustainable, really good lives, earning good wages in Hawaii. I'm so impressed with them. And of course, the Chamber of Commerce is a huge part of it. If you haven't listened, I'm just going to do a shameless plug for the... Well, it's for the Chamber of Commerce. It's not for me. But they are just running this fantastic series of interviews with people in the community, you know, businesses. And the interviews go out once a week to about 8,000 people in the community. So it's a good way to get the word of your business out. And they're really fun to do. I'm really, really very, I feel very honored to be able to, you know, contribute in some small way and give back. Although, as I was joking with them yesterday, they are working me a bit harder than I actually
that you thought.
That's the care. Be careful when you volunteer for things, everybody. You know what that's like. Coming up in just a little while, we're going to talk about really another amazing thing from Hawaii, which is really almost a miracle fruit in some ways. The humble bread fruit is going to be the topic of our discussion in just a few minutes this morning. But as always, Bobby, every Thursday we're headed into, you know, interesting weeks and sporting events.
No question.
We're getting closer to the big summer start of August football season. Hard to imagine.
But that's, you know, it's not that far away. I mean, coaches are always so aware of this, and the players especially. It seems like forever. August 28th, when is that? That's way at the end of the summer. Well, Hawaii will be at the Rose Bowl playing UCLA on August the 28th, and trust me, it is coming more quickly than anybody thinks.
Have you started your countdown yet? You know how you used to always in the studio do the countdown?
No, not yet. We'll do that. We'll probably get to that fairly soon, but we haven't really started
July
it yet.
July 30, 28, 58, June. I mean, you're probably only about 65 days out or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yep, 65 days.
Don't anyone check my mental math.
But no, but that's probably close.
It's quite close, isn't it? Well, good. We'll look forward to that. And, of course, it is going to come up faster than it does every year, right? Before anybody realizes it's right here. Okay, you can rest easy and take a break because I think you're going to learn something amazing about a fruit from Hawaii, the humble bread fruit. It has really been celebrated by our next guest, Dana Shapiro, who's the co-founder of the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative. She has created a network of Ulu farmers to promote the beautiful Hawaiian breadfruit. She's joining us right now. Good morning, Dana. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. You know, what you're doing is really educating people about a most incredible fruit. Tell us a little bit about how this started for you, because you have a really interesting story to share. So go back to the beginning of you and breadfruit.
Oh, thank you. Well, I guess I first really fell in love with the crop back about 10 or 11 years ago when I was roped into being the volunteer coordinator at a breadfruit festival on the Big Island by a friend. And being sort of an avid cook, I entered the recipe contest and found that this was like the most versatile crop that I had ever really been exposed to. And that's really what piqued my interest. And the following year, I met my husband, who was also part of the festival, and he was doing his PhD on the traditional Hawaiian agroforestry system in Kailua Kona. And that, for me, really opened my eyes to the just ingenious, sustainable farming practices that the Hawaiians were practicing pre-colonization. And together we started a breadfruit farm a few years later in South Kona, in the area that was part of the traditional system. And, you know, as an individual farm, it's really hard to sort of build, an industry, really, because there was not an active industry for the crop at the time. And my personal background is in co-ops. I'm originally from Israel, which has a really strong co-op sector, and studied co-op business strategy, and just saw an opportunity for a producer cooperative to really help build the industry and help farmers, you know, reach economy of scale and market collectively. And that's what we did. And it's been almost 5 years.
Congratulations, because it really is a movement that's growing. What you said right at the beginning is something that's always struck me. This is the most incredibly versatile crop of almost all of the wonderful ones that we have in Hawaii. I'm sure many people listening are very aware of the different ways you can use breadfruit, but let's talk a little bit from your educational perspective. How do you go about teaching people about how many different things they can use this for? Because it can mimic so many different foods, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I usually start with the potato substitute because that's the most popular form that it's used here locally. And when the fruit is fully mature, which is like still firm, mostly green, but the starches have fully developed, so there's very little latex in the flesh at that point. At that maturity stage, it is so similar to a potato. You can basically fool people in recipes like stews or mash or, you know, patties, hash browns. It is so similar to a potato. A lot of people say it's like a potato, only better. So that's the entry point, I think, for newcomers to the crop. And from there, again, just sort of drawing the parallel between the fruit at different maturity stages and things that it's so similar to, like you said, as it ripens, it becomes sweet like a pumpkin and then really sweet and soft like a banana. When it's really young, it's very similar to artichoke hearts when it's, if it's steamed or boiled. If you don't know that you're eating breadfruit, it's very easy to try to fool people and tell them it's something else.
I've even seen recipes for ulu hummus, for example, like dips made from breadfruit that people swear by.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, the cooperative, tell us a little bit about the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative and how it actually works.
So a cooperative business is one that is owned by the people it serves. And there's all different kinds of co-ops, right? There's market co-ops like Kokua Market in Honolulu on King Street. That's the co-op where the consumers own the business. There's utility co-ops like the Kauai Electric Grid is actually a utility co-op. The users of the electricity own the business. In our case, we're a farmer co-op. So the farmers who supply our ulu own the business, and they have the really the only sort of voting stock. They govern the business, they elect the board of directors, and at the end of the year, if we're profitable, our profits are distributed back to the members according to patronage, which is a co-op term that refers to their relative share of fruit contributed to the whole. So if I, as a farmer, contribute 10% of the co-op's ulu in a given year, I'm actually entitled to 10% of the profit. It's not a traditional, you know, for-profit business structure. It exists for the sole purpose of serving an unmet need of its members. And in our case, those members are Hawaii's small diversified farmers.
It's just a wonderful growing movement, and it's just so great to see how much you are growing and how much you've done just in the past 5 years. Now, do we have, as consumers, do we have enough access to breadfruit, or is it something that we really need to see more in mainstream grocery stores? Is that your goal, to have people to be able to just have breadfruit, use it to the best of their ability, and have just, you know, enormous access to it?
Yeah, that's absolutely our goal. Most people know the statistic that Hawaii is 85 to 90% reliant on imported food. But when you break it down by food group, we are the least self-sufficient in our staple food category. We import nearly 100%, virtually 100% of our staples, like rice, wheat, you know, potato, corn. Those are sort of the conventional Western staples that have completely colonized our diets here to this day. And that is so risky if you think about it. You know, if the barges stop coming and all the food that we're producing is tomatoes and lettuce, we cannot subsist for very long. So increasing our self-sufficiency in staples is critical. And ulu provides the very best potential for that, because it's a tree crop, it's relatively resilient to, you know, climate change and different weather events, and it's such an abundant, prolific producer of nutritious food. So yes, our goal is absolutely to see ulu start to, you know, replace some of the rice in people's diets. We talk about, you know, start with one meal a week or one meal a month. That already can have a huge impact on our collective food security and the local economy. And I think the biggest challenge right now is actually supply. You know, not just through our efforts, but through a network of community efforts over the past 5, even 10 years, there has been an increase in awareness, an increase in demand, and we see supply as the major limitation right now. And, you know, hopefully that will change over the next decade as more of Hawaii's planted ulu trees come online and start to bear fruit. So just our co-op alone, we have about 105 producers who collectively have over 5,000 planted trees. Most of them are not yet bearing fruit. They're not yet mature. It takes about 5 years for the tree to start bearing fruit. but by 2030, we project 1 million pounds of ulu per year, and that is just the tip of the spear. Again, when you think about how many millions of pounds of all these imported staples we bring in every year, we need a lot more than 1 million pounds of ulu to make a dent.
We're talking with Dana Shapiro. She is the co-founder of the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative. You can find out more about Dana and the cooperative if you go to eatbreadfruit.com, where there's a wealth of information. Dana, am I right in thinking that breadfruit is also a year-round crop? It's not something that we rely on seasonally.
No, not exactly. It actually is quite seasonal. I think that what you might be thinking of is the fact that different varieties can fruit at different times.
There you go. So it can be producing all year, but it's just different varieties, right?
Well, but even across varieties, it seems like the peak season is pretty concentrated in the fall. So that is a challenge. And that's why we've developed a line of minimally processed breadfruit cuts that are basically pre-steamed and frozen so that they can be stored and distributed year-round. And this past year, in fall of 2020, we really scaled our ulu flower production in partnership with a few other organizations. And we feel like that's a really important addition sort of to the frozen product mix, is to have a truly shelf-stable option. Because frozen, you know, it's costly to run the freezers. If, God forbid, there's a horrible hurricane and the power grid goes out, you know, shelf-stable just provides that extra buffer of security. So we have both a dry line and a frozen line to overcome that seasonality issue.
You're so well organized. I've been speaking recently to people who seem to have every step of their career has led them to where they are now, as if every step was just leading them to the perfect goal. And with your background in running cooperatives, it's obvious that you're the perfect person to be doing this and encouraging the growth of it. So we're so glad that you're out there doing this. Thank you for that. You know, I wanted to ask you, Dana, maybe it's just me, but usually if I think it, other people think it too. Breadfruit is just a tiny little bit intimidating if you are coming to it for the first time. I mean, it's a knobbly big fruit that you can look at it and go, okay, where do I start with this? So for a novice cook who wants to introduce breadfruit to their family, and as you say, doing it once a week as a meal substitution is a wonderful way. What is a couple of easy ways that you can share with us that people could start to incorporate breadfruit into their family diets?
Oh, that is a great question. If you don't want to deal with the raw fruit, we do have those minimally processed, we call it recipe-ready ulu packs in 12-ounce portions, which is enough to feed 3 to 4 people at a number of grocery stores around the state, including all the down-to-earth locations and a few food lands on Oahu, as well as Kokua Market and FarmLink. So that is a really easy way to start. You just take it out of the bag, you can re-steam it, and chop it up and drizzle a little butter and salt on top. It's delicious. Again, it's like potatoes. Or you can get more creative and incorporate it into stews. If you ever put potatoes in soups or stews, use breadfruit just the same way. It's nearly identical. If you ever make, hash browns, if you want to do patties, that's my husband's favorite way. So he just steams it until it's soft and then mashes it up with any vegetables or meat that we have and fries it on both sides. It's delicious. You can also do burgers, like half ground beef and half ulu, if you're trying to, you know, maybe reduce your red meat consumption, but you still love meat and don't want to cut it out entirely. That's a great way to do that. If you do want to use the raw fruit, we also have some tips, and there's actually a great blog on our website and a video that was produced by the Hamakua Cultural Center, the Hawaiian Cultural Center of Hamakua is the name, and they really show how to take a raw breadfruit and very simply break it down, parse-steam it, freeze what you're not using right away, and then use it later for recipes.
Fabulous.
So go ahead and watch that.
Yeah. And if you go straight to eatbreadfruit.com, you will be just amazed and delighted at how many recipes are on the website. Dana, it was so good to talk to you. We have completely talked ourselves out of time, but I thank you so much for the wonderful work you're doing, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
Dana Shapiro from the Hawaii Ulu Cooperative. It's time for us to go. We're going to take a short break. Hopefully we'll come back and say goodbye. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. We really did talk ourselves out of time this morning. I just think that's such a fascinating crop, breadfruit. It's funny because we started the show this morning talking about sugarcane, specifically about Hawaiian agricole rum. Sugarcane, obviously an incredible crop to Hawaii, and it's been a staple here for, I'm going to say, 1,000 years. Ulu has been a staple for almost 1,000 years. It's really amazing that we have these crops that are so versatile. And if you want an idea of how versatile ulu is, and you want to start incorporating it a little bit into your family's diet, because it is so good for you, then go to the website eatbreadfruit.com, and really you'll be amazed at the recipes. I'm going down a rabbit hole of recipes this morning looking at them, and there is everything here from ulu angel food cake to ulu chowder to even ulu Irish soda bread. So you can, of course, buy now ulu flour, and I'm sure that's going to become a really big thing, and it was wonderful to hear from Dana and the cooperative on the work that they're doing. So go check them out, support them. If you haven't, challenge yourself this weekend. If you haven't yet introduced this amazing crop to your family diet, do it this weekend. Do one recipe and see how it goes, and see if you can fool them into eating something incredibly healthy. It's so delicious that you obviously can. And it was a pleasure to chat with Anderson Lee this morning of the Hawaii International Film Festival. Go there from today and see their wonderful selection of shorts and movies all about food. That's going to wrap us up this morning. Thanks to Bobby Curran. Thanks to Tanner in the studio. Thank you to Titus Young for getting us some great guests today. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Joe McGarry. We'll see you next week on Radio Mojo Plus.
Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu has been brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria.